Hi, this is Russ Benson. I am a Liverpool supporter, and you're listening to Drunkard United Football Show. You all need Jesus.
You all needed to win at Goodison Park. You didn't fucking do that now, did you? So I'm going to pass on Jesus Christi. How about you, Graham?
My prayers were answered, so... It just reaffirmed my commitment that Jesus Christ is my Lord and Savior.
Yeah, they did it again. They lost the league at Goodison Park again. Let's start the show.
Born in the land of Bowie, Maryland. Bred to be a fan of fucking Everton. Punch you in the eye and drink your rye. Sam Houston.
Sam Houston?
Arsenal fans have another Sam. A.K.A. the fucking Gooner Graham. Spell of my Lord. Look straight and short. Sam Graham.
Sam Graham.
Fucking United! Fucking United!
Hello and welcome to the DU Football Show, a completely biased recap of the midweek's action of the English Premier League, as told by two common American schmucks. I am your host, Sam Houston, and across the internets, my co-host, Mr. Samuel Graham.
Hey.
Oh, hey, yeah. How about that?
You normally
say how you doing.
I'm sitting there going, did we lose Graham's audio? I'm starting to panic. No. I'm like,
Well, I was going to give...
You normally say something else, and you didn't say it.
I'm too fucking happy that Everton beat Liverpool to really be bothered by with how you're doing, Mr.
Hold
Graham.
On. What happened?
I could give a damn. Everton beat Liverpool.
That's funny. Really?
Yeah, really.
I'm just kidding. I know.
Yeah, again. And of course, producer Mel on the ones and twos. And then also in studio with us today is... One Big B Kiwi has a nice, big, gorgeous bed laying out underneath my feet, dead to the world.
I turned around to look at him on the bed. I go, wait, where's the dog?
Yeah, dog is right there. That's where he is.
He likes under the desk.
Do you have to go find yourself a bottle copper or something, Mr. Graham? Because you disappeared from screen for a moment.
Sure did. I had to find a bottle opener.
Very good. We're recording at the DU Public House just outside the nation's capital. You can check us out wherever you get your podcasts. And, of course, streaming live most Monday nights. This one, we're not streaming live tonight because it's midweek. It's late at night. And we need to get shit done on a Thursday. Exactly. Should you want to chat with us, there is many ways that you can. Mr. Graham, tell the good people how they can get in touch.
Of course, as always, it is at DU Football Show on all the social media and DUFootballShow@gmail.com to get in touch by
Excellent. Very good. No fun thing. I mean, the closed group was very funny, of course. They had some good stuff. And one person has already messaged me with, hey, lovey love, because that's now a thing.
Yep, sure is.
Say myself, who work in the wine and spirit industry, and both have a deep, passionate love for all things distilled spirits. So as the red-blooded Americans we are, we vow to have a drink in our hand throughout this show and every single show. Mr. Graham... The whiskey advocate list is over. And that means two words. Gin binge. Mr. Graham, why don't you tell the good listeners that are new to the show what the gin binge is?
Basically, when we get done drinking a fuck ton of whiskey over the last 20-odd weeks, we then turn our attention to gin as the weather starts to break.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are with a lovely 65-degree day. Sun shining, wind in my hair. Mm-hmm. Not yours, obviously.
My goatee.
It was absolutely brilliant today. A couple of hot days over the weekend coming up here. So the gin binge begins because gin is super refreshing. Mm-hmm. And since we're not together, I'm not going to drink anything new to our listeners. Yeah, of course.
Same thing as well.
I am revisiting one that we drank last year. The Tulchin gin, it's a Scottish gin from Speyside. This one runs 90 proof. I am drinking that with the old gin and lemonade classic. So I've got the Fever Tree sparkling Sicilian lemonade to go along with it to make myself a nice, refreshing gin and lemonade cocktail.
Love it.
Absolutely fantastic as usual. This one runs you about $35, $40 on the shelf. It's just smooth and easy going, juniper light, you know, kind of made in the idea of Hendrick's, which obviously was the original craft Scottish gin, and kind of invented the toned down juniper style of gin.
Yeah, cucumber mellowed.
Exactly. So the this one is quite similar, actually. No rose petal, no cucumber like Hendrick's, but equally as smooth and just very, very good. Love the bottle as well, with the tartan going down the side and the piper on the label with the Highlands there in the background. It's quite nice. Everything about this gin is just lovely.
Excellent. Very good. I am also doing a gin that we've drank before as well. We're doing the Ophir. It's a London dry gin that is Asian influence, so it's got a little bit of coriander and black peppercorn from the Far East in it as well. I did that with the dry citrus tonic from Regatta as well. And then I didn't have any lime in the house, so I hit it with a little bit of grapefruit bitters to give it some of that citrus splash that you're looking for.
Nice.
As always, boys and girls, with your mixers and your tonic and your Coke, for whatever you're mixing with, for the love of Christ, make sure it's cold. Absolutely make sure it's cold. It mixes with your alcohol better. It's going to make for a better drink. Don't assume the ice is going to do all the work, especially if it's warm. You put warm liquor, warm mixer over ice, it's just going to melt and dilute the drink really, really fast. So please always, always, always make sure you use a cold cold mixer.
Yes, absolutely. Make sure you do that. And also, on that note, remember to drink responsibly, everybody.
I am so glad that we're back in our gin binge phase. I love it. It's such a good time of year.
Gin is so good. And I, my company's released, well, acquired, and a couple of new products as well.
Mm-hmm.
A fair few very good gins.
Love it.
So I'm excited to bring those to the table over the next few weeks. It's going to be a joy.
Perfect. Well, then it's all you with gin. I'm not gonna supply anything. You bring your gin, since you got a bunch of fun ones. I'll make sure I go out and get us some decent tonics as well.
Yep.
And did you already tell everybody to drink responsibly? I don't remember.
Yes, I did. I was on top of the admin today.
Excellent. Well done, good sir. We are responsible people, damn it. The battle for the title has appeared to lose a contender as we were treated to a classic Merseyside derby. Everton 2, Liverpool 0, Arsenal 5, Chelsea 0, Man City 4, Brighton 0. What a fucking match. And by the way, Mr. Graham, I just want to let you know, the line to blow all the Everton players starts behind this guy right here. I'm already on my knees, I'm ready to go. Go ahead and Piper Perry it up, boys. Don't fucking care.
I mean, that's just normal for you, isn't it? I mean, honestly, what a performance from Everton. They were organized. They were fantastic. Just, you know, they just wouldn't and couldn't be beat. I mean, little short arms figured out his go-go gadgetness.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he made a couple of huge fucking saves.
Fantastic saves. Obviously, Liverpool dominated the match. I mean, over 75% possession. But they had 7 shots on target to your 6. They were kind of blunt. It was a lot of possession and doing nothing with it.
What I was about to say is Everton were clinical with the opportunities they had, because even on the ones they didn't score, you think about like Dominic Calvert-Lewin with the potential penalty ended up ultimately being offsides. They had a couple of clean hitters they could have put away. Oh, it was definitely
That was a pen as well. They were very lucky he was offsides there. And one of the correct offside decisions of this past week.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, Liverpool players, shut the fuck up. You got one back now. The only difference was you weren't able to injure DCL like we did Van Dijk. So get over it. You had one called back now too, okay? Stop it.
Yeah, exactly. Calamitous piece of defending for Jarrod Branthwaite to score his opener.
Oh, yeah.
Not something we normally have been accustomed to from Liverpool. You know, this has kind of been actually Arsenal's bag, where we play really fucking well, and then this random piece of the stars aligning and everybody collectively taking a shit in their own pants together tends to happen.
Yeah.
That happened for Liverpool here for Jarrod Branthwaite's opener. Now, he still had a lot to do, but the situation in which he was presented the opportunity was completely Liverpool's fault.
Yeah, nobody was able to clear the ball. All they had to do was clear the fucking ball, and nobody could do it.
Nobody could get it out. It was very strange. A very weird performance from Liverpool just in general. I mean, I don't know what blunted their knives, but the last few weeks, they don't seem up for it. They look like the hangover we kind of expected from City.
Mm-hmm.
After having won the treble, obviously.
Right.
It's, you know, you expect a bit of hangover, like, you know, kind of not imposter syndrome. What's it called? Realization syndrome or something, whatever it is, where you have a goal set for yourself. You achieve that goal. And then after that, you wake up the next day and go, well, what now?
Right. Yeah.
Whatever that's called. Olympians get it all the time.
Well, I was going to say with Mo Salah was a complete non-factor in this match. Now, part of it was Everton's defense was phenomenal. You mentioned Pickford with making the saves, but let's face it. They were blocking all the shots. They were winning every head ball in the box. I mean, they just seemed to want it more. And Idrissa Gueye, again, allow me to reiterate, he might be really fucking good at his job. All he was doing was intercepting passes left and right with about 30 to 25 yards outside of their box. He was intercepting everything. When he got subbed off, you could tell that man was completely beat down, exhausted.
Absolutely gassed. But the other thing about, you mentioned Salah, he had, I think, by himself, 6 or 7 shots. Only 2 of them on target. But both shots on target were quite tame.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Pickford were very routine saves.
Yeah, Pickford so made just, 3 nice saves, and there was Diaz's ball off the post. Outside of that, that was it for Liverpool. They had the ball a lot. They had shots, but that was it. It was really those 4 opportunities, and that was flat out it.
I mean, but Everton saw their opportunity, you know, and they took their opportunity, and you can't begrudge them that. This was such a cohesive performance from Everton. Everybody was pulling and fighting in the same direction, which is not something we've been often able to say about them over the last, 18 months or so. Roughly.
And then you couple that with the stadium comes alive and they get louder and that building becomes so intense and it bears down on top of you. And surprisingly, it clearly affected Liverpool. You could tell they were absolutely affected by the atmosphere. They look shook.
Yeah, so it's one of those we've talked about it multiple times with multiple teams. You know, it's been levied at my Arsenal a fair amount over the years, especially with this younger team over the last 2 years. But the longer a game goes, without a goal or like a clear cut chance or a clear, very concise sign that we're on top, the nerves start to creep in and the field gets a little smaller and the crowd seems like they're overbearing just a little bit more and everything just becomes this massively pressurized situation that doesn't exist. You start trying too hard. You start overthinking. You start overplaying. You start doing all of these various things. And Liverpool seemed to fall foul of all of those things. And Goodison just became this monkey on their back, this monster in their closet. And they couldn't really figure out how to play like Liverpool. Completely honest. I mean, if that makes sense, they had all the possession in the world. But they literally, I mean, the final third was their enemy. They couldn't figure out how to do anything.
There's a few thoughts to that, too. The Klopp really didn't have any options to change the game. With both Gakpo out for the birth of his child, and then Jota with an injury again and going to be out for a couple weeks, that really affects, like, how do you change the game offensively? The fact that you typically have 3 or 4 guys that you could completely switch the front if you need to. And in a match where, like, Salah's not doing anything, Diogo Jota would have been perfect in that spot. Like, you put him in, he changes up the game, makes Everton think a little bit more, but the more Everton grew into it. And then after Dominic Calvert-Lewin scores, I mean, what's probably the most typical Everton goal ever, right? A corner kick, open header. Trent Alexander-Arnold nowhere close to Lewin. I mean, Lewin had just a wide open hit.
But there's the thing. Is there's absolutely no reason Trent Alexander-Arnold should be marking your number nine.
Yeah.
DCL's got him by 4 or 5 inches height-wise. DCL's a great jumper. He's got a good leap on him. He can get up there. Why is Virgil van Dijk not on? Why is, you know, Kanate or Gomez or whoever it was that those traditional very large center backs, why are they not marking your tallest, best leaper?
Other than they were probably, let's face it, Everton does have that slight advantage with Branthwaite and Tarkowski. Tarkowski, like, you literally see a lot of times Everton will focus free kicks and corners to Tarkowski to be the head. Well,
he's very good in the air. You're absolutely right. He very regularly peels off to that back post to head back across goal, and which is why Everton are second only to Arsenal in free kick in set play goal this season.
Right.
I think we've got 20 goals from set plays. You've got 13 or 14 or something.
Yep.
But the point is Trent Alexander-Arnold is yay high.
Right. Of course.
DCL's yay high and can jump well. So you have to find some sort of offensive strategy that doesn't mix match these people so badly.
But even within that, there's still the problem that Alexander-Arnold wasn't even on him. Like, at least typically when there's a smaller player on a bigger player, they'll lean into him. They'll give him a little nudge. They'll make it difficult for him. That was the most clear, wide open, straightaway, how's your father fucking header ever. I mean, he was all alone. Like,
absolutely. But we know that about Trent Alexander-Arnold. He switches off. He's not focused in. Defense is the last thing on his mind, even though he is a defender.
Yeah.
It's very, very plain to see that defense is not his priority.
And then right after that goal, all Klopp can do is just give a grin. Like, it just, you could see it in his face. He was just like, fuck. Like, what are we going to do? We're done. He could tell at that moment they were already done, that they could try. And then that's when Diaz had the ball off the post. And by then, the players on the pitch are starting to think, what are we going to do? How are we going to score?
It's just not our day today. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's just not our day today.
Yeah.
And really, to be, obviously, with your affiliation, it was an excellent game. For the neutral, the game was a bit ugly.
Mm-hmm.
But what it needed was a Liverpool goal to draw Everton out, become a back-and-forth contest.
Right.
Right. Everton, with obviously going up, they were able to park the bus a bit and then hit on the counter, which they did to great effect, obviously. They only had one less shot on target than Liverpool, as I said earlier. But Liverpool, again, that pressurized situation starts to grow and mount and get bigger and bigger and bigger with every passing chance it doesn't come to be. And it's really difficult because Jordan Pickford is a good goalkeeper despite the size of his arms.
Mm-hmm.
So when he plays like a person with regular size arms, it's really, really difficult to beat him.
Yeah, it's, you know, the...
And Liverpool just looks shell-shocked. Like, where did those appendages come from?
Very
he
fair.
It was very... They just were shocked.
There is a reason why Jordan Pickford is England's number one. He is an exceptional fucking shot blocker.
It's because he can kick the ball well. That's why. His distribution is excellent.
Yeah. Yeah, for me, I wonder, is Liverpool done? You know, that's what I wonder now.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with you. I think they are done. I'm pretty sure. With the remaining fixtures, with everything that is to play for. It seems like they're just petering out. It seems like they have nothing left in the tank. And I, based on that question, I would like to take this opportunity as an Arsenal supporter and as a Catholic and with HR, one of the most religious men that listens to our podcast, listening to the podcast right now, Mr. Russell Benson, I would like to offer one up in prayer.
Graham is lighting a candle, everybody.
And remembrance for Liverpool's title challenge. Because it died today. RIP Liverpool title challenge.
It's interesting because Klopp always downplayed the Merseyside derby, right? And also with his players and the way he had them play was not to get into the scrap, not to let it get ugly, and to just ignore it, right? To just ignore it and get by. And this one, this time it didn't work. Everton came out right off the bat and they were like,
yep,
we are going to crack a motherfucker. Every single time somebody gets a ball, they're going to know we are on them. And it just... His final Merseyside derby, a loss at Goodison. As an Everton supporter, this never goes our way. This game, this storyline, exactly what it is, that's supposed to be they beat us 5-0 and they go on to win the fucking title. Right? And that was the catalyst that turned it around for him to win it. And it's like, it never goes our way. And there I'm watching a game. And the whole time, you know, I still got my inner Everton wondering, are we going to Everton that? Are we going to, is the shoe going to drop? But as the game built on, it was like, no, it's not. It's finally our day. It's finally, there isn't some fucking wackadoodle Jordan Pickford hitting it off the bar, Davic Origi fucking bullshit, or Sadio Mane scoring inside the box with like 1 minute left in extra time. Like that, it wasn't that. We played well. We played our game. We fucking won. And and as the last 5 minutes of the match was going on, you could hear the entire stadium singing, "You lost the league at Goodison Park," at the top of their lungs. And
And multiple times throughout the match, they were doing that. And once you scored that first goal, those choruses jumped off a fair few times. It was excellent.
Credit to NBC Sports for just staying with that. They stayed with it for a good 8 minutes afterwards. Just let it be the crowd. Listen to the crowd. Listen to this game. Like, listen to everyone.
What I like about that, too, is they do that for Anfield a lot. Obviously, the You'll Never Walk Alone anthem is quite famous throughout world football, not even just English football, as we all know. And it is a special song and a special thing when the, you know, Anfield is cranking. And for them to, they're the only ones that I've ever seen that get that 5 minutes pregame coverage so you can listen to You'll Never Walk Alone, right? So the fact that they showed that respect to Everton in this situation for 8 minutes after the game, I thought was actually quite special and fair and balanced journalism for a change.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty decent.
Which is funny because really also NBC's broadcast very rarely, whenever they do the little in between commercial shout cut ins of people wearing jerseys, every single Everton game, Liverpool could be playing on Sunday and Everton could be playing on Saturday, some intern there is having a piss because they will always show one Liverpool fan. It's like, goddamn, sorry, Russ, Everton versus Brentford. Why are you showing a Liverpool fucking supporter? Like, Jesus Christ, you're driving me nuts.
Yeah, it's fucking ridiculous. Well, speaking of fair and balanced, you mentioned Darwin Nunez hitting the post.
Oh, it's Diaz hitting the post in the second half. He's the one who hit off the inside.
It was Diaz. I'm sorry, it was Diaz. Yeah. That wasn't the inside. That was as square as you could possibly hit the fucking post ever. Mm-hmm. The thud that made is one of the funniest sounds I've ever heard in my entire life. Yep. It was like all this buildup, and you could hear the tension in the crowd. They were terrified of this chance. And then just this... Because it just, as square as could be, it almost came straight back to him. It was as square and central on the post as it possibly could have been, and that is fucking hysterical.
And what happened after that, too, is Everton immediately got the ball and immediately cleared it out. It was just the way Everton was functioning.
Well, exactly, and that's what Liverpool failed to do for Branthwaite's goal, like we said earlier. You know, is Everton had this very clear, very concise, very no-bullshit approach to this game. Where you don't have have a ball to play and within the first 8 seconds of receiving it, fucking thump it.
Yeah.
Reorganize.
Yep.
Right. And that they just kept happening over and over and over again. This was the first time I've actually watched Everton and thought, that looks like Burnley 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm. That looks like dice ball.
That is fucking, they finally clicked. They finally fucking got it. And it was excellent. You add in all of this narrative that goes along with it, right? Because that's a huge piece of it. You have Liverpool's vying for a title. You've all been docked, you know, the amount of points you've been docked this season, you know, over and over again, technically. you fought your way out of it. You're about to get relegated, potentially. You have all these things going on. So you could have, in the same season, the first time you've been relegated in almost 90 years, and then also your most bitter rival lifting the Premier League trophy.
Oh,
and
yeah.
it kind of comes down to this game, right? You have all of these different things. Dyche has done enough, but it hasn't looked good. It hasn't clicked yet. Like Burnley, when we watched Dyche's Burnley, you saw the plan. You saw the exact things he was trying to do. And most of the time, it came off and it was organized and it was well done. And the season they got the fucking Europa League, they finished in seventh or whatever it mm-hmm. was, because they were that organized and in tune and with it, right? I haven't seen that from this Everton team yet. Now, a lot of those players are players that have come, you know, from bigger clubs that are used to playing a certain way, that maybe not want to put a shift in necessarily. They're, you know, people that have we thought we moved on from this as Everton Football Club from playing this type of football under David Moyes years mm-hmm. ago. You know, we thought we were turning a corner and playing better. Why are we doing this? You know, and some players, you know, maybe why Tom Davies left, you know, last summer, you know, why Anthony Gordon left, just not prepared to put that work in or whatever. And it just hasn't clicked. Today, or I'm sorry, Wednesday, yesterday was the first day that I've seen that this all looked like everyone was rowing on time and rowing in the same direction.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody was going, you know, following the cadence and beating the drum. And this is what we're doing. And they had a clear, concise, good, solid plan and executed it on the back end to a fucking T. And it was absolutely brilliant.
Are Everton safe?
Yeah, fuck yeah. They're 8 points clear as it stands.
Mathematically not points. Yet, but it feels like they are, doesn't it?
Yeah. 100%. Everton with this win, I reckon you go on to at least draw the next two games. Honestly, just because the momentum and the, you know, everything you put in on it. Oh shit, it did work.
It would be fitting to go to Luton and beat Luton at Luton, just because they beat.
Is that your next game? I haven't even.
No,
looked.
Our
I'm
next
sorry.
Game is that... our next game is Brentford. The one after that is, so it's home to Brentford, at Luton, home to Sheffield United, away to you. That's our last four, and I feel like there's at least 3 points in there. Of
so
those
let me
three
rephrase.
Games, there's at least 3 points.
Let me rephrase. You'll be safe within the next two matches, mathematically, I think.
I tend to agree. I do tend to agree. You called it, Graham. You said it was going to be a training game for Arsenal, and it sure as hell was, because Chelsea sure as fuck didn't show up, and you guys rolled over them with ease.
Chelsea had some chances. They actually had a few forays into our box. The corner that ended up kind of flashing across the face of De Sassi was their most dangerous chance, and he didn't even get a fucking touch on it. Everything else was very tame, very easy, and their defending was almost like, you know, they thought red was lava and they couldn't get near it.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it was just free and clear, easy days for us. I mean, it was absolutely ridiculous. Ben White, who famously doesn't even like football, accidentally had a football career, accidentally scored a fucking goal.
Two. He had the brace.
No, one was an actual accident.
Oh, okay.
He didn't mean it. The ball came to him on a diagonal, and he tried to side foot volley across, back across the face of goal, and it nestled in the top corner like he was fucking Johan Cruyff. It was absolutely brilliant. I mean, if you're so good, you're scoring by accident. The other team should be automatically relegated. I mean, it's just how it should go. It's a shame that them's not the rules, but it should be, because I don't know what Chelsea were doing, right? But whatever the opposite, the full antithesis to the Ghostbusters, to the Scooby-Doo gang, the guys that chase ghosts and catch them, the antithesis to that was Chelsea's defense. Because they were chasing ghosts and getting nowhere fucking near it.
No, not at all. I wonder, this is the thing about Chelsea, though, too. You see them draw Sheffield, which is a head-scratcher. They beat the ever-loving shit out of Everton. Then they have an absolute dud in the FA Cup semi. And then this one, they get played off the field completely. They're so up and down, you have no idea what to expect from them.
That comes with a young team, right? There is talent in the team.
A ton of talent.
Obviously, Cole Palmer was suspended or whatever it was, couldn't play in this game for whatever reason. You also had somebody else was hurt as well. But without their best player, obviously, they were going to be falling apart. Poch even, I think, said beforehand, show them why you're Chelsea Football Club and not Cole Palmer Football Club, right? And they obviously couldn't do that. They had complete erectile dysfunction going forward. And defensively, they had a problem with, being addicted to just bending over and spreading their cheeks, because they let us through like every fucking time. And it was absolutely amazing. When they had the ball, you didn't worry at all that they were going to score. Every time Arsenal had the ball, they looked like they were going to score. I mean, I had a real money bet on this, right, on FanDuel, that I missed by two Arsenal corners. And it's basically because Petrovic and the Chelsea defense let in too many goals. You get two of those fairly simple saves. Just tip it. I was hoping he saved the fucking – just tip it over to Barr, you cunt.
So you could get a corner.
Yeah, 3-0. That's fine. I'll take that win. No problem. Good goal differential. I like it. Just tip something over to Barr so I can get a corner and win some goddamn money. Petrovic and the Chelsea defense cost me $170 payout on a $5 bet, and it really annoyed the absolute piss out of me.
Was this the answer that Arsenal needed to finish out the season, or was this just another game?
No, 100%. This is, we saw at the weekend the kind of lethargic performance against Wolves. We ended up getting over the line, at the end of the day, but it was not the most convincing of performances, obviously, against a Wolves side. Yes, they're quite good, Wolves, and organized and with it and together with a plan, but they were decimated by injuries again for whatever reason. Obviously, we've already spoke about how I fucked up our friends podcast because of that. But to have this bounce back, right? And how many times do we say young players play the occasion and not the game? Mm-hmm. Chelsea's still a big name. Chelsea has recently won the Champions League. Chelsea are it's a derby match. It's a game that we, in the last 5-7 years, have not traditionally done very well in. Usually goads one of our players into a red card or, a kind of blunt performance. And, we don't always fare very well against Chelsea. So to have that kind of mental, like we even said it about Manchester United with beating them last year, it was like, it seems like we've turned a corner now because we got this mental block out of our head. So beating Chelsea, doing the double over Chelsea this year, and in the manner in which we did it, I think is a massive step forward and a huge plus for the Arsenal, right?
Four matches left, and the next one is the North London Derby, my good man.
Makes me nervous.
Yeah.
And this is the thing. Like I said about Chelsea, I'll say the same thing about Manchester United. All of these clubs have problems, right? All of these clubs have issues. You know, we're quite young and sometimes succumb to pressure. I think about the Fulham and West Ham games in December, right? Sometimes we stand up to it, and you know, away to City, we get the draw we needed. We stick exactly to the game plan. We follow these things. It depends what team shows up for Tottenham on Sunday. All of those teams that I mentioned, Manchester United included, Tottenham included, which we still have to go to Manchester United in a couple of weeks, is they all have individual quality that can beat you, that can pick you off. If they can stay sound defensively, they have a player that can change a game. All of those teams do. All of those teams also are very disjointed, right? Chelsea being the worst of that lot. Tottenham probably being the best, and Manchester United falling somewhere in the middle. If we can manage to stifle those star players, Bruno Fernandes picking a pass or scoring himself, right? If we can stop Son and for once not concede a fucking penalty to him, we have a great chance here. We have an actual real chance, because defensively, all of those teams have their frailties. They all have their weaknesses. And we have one of the best offensive, if not the best offense, in the league. So we can fucking figure it out.
City answered the call with a blowout win of their own. And it's kind of funny. It just feels like every time Phil Foden scores, he's going to score more than one. This is like, I would say at least fourth or fifth time he scored double digits. Like a double, yes. I mean not double digits, but a brace or a hat trick this season. He just... seems like when he starts scoring, he ain't gonna stop scoring.
Well, he's got two hat tricks already. I toyed with the idea of putting $10 down on him to score a hat trick again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after he got that second one. But you make your own luck, right? If a lot of very successful people will tell you that you make your own luck. You put yourself in a position, and then hopefully things go for you and the other guy doesn't have the balls to stand up to the challenge or to complete the job, right? And Phil Foden, I feel like, gets lucky a lot. But he puts himself in the positions to be lucky. If you're not there running at that defense, the referee can't possibly call you slipping as a foul. Because that wasn't a foul. He slipped.
Mm-hmm.
And if he doesn't get that free kick, he can't get the other piece of luck of that deflection.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So he's putting himself in the positions to be successful, whether by his own hand or somebody else, you know, trying too hard.
Seagulls just look tired right now. And in fact, for the first time this season, they find themselves out of the top 10.
It's a struggle for them right now with injuries, especially on the forward line. You think of people that can change the game. You've got Matoma, who's been out for months. You've got Evan Ferguson, who's sporadically played over the last 3-4 months. Mm-hmm. I think maybe 2 appearances. They're just not fully fit. Danny Welbeck's getting old. Adam Lallana has been well past his prime for a while. Good locker room guy, and that's great, and there's a reason he's there, but not up to snuff really anymore.
And Yao Pedro can score goals, but he can't do it by himself if there's nobody getting him the fucking ball.
Absolutely correct. He can't do it by himself. He can't do, you know, everything. And he tried to do everything in this match. He had a couple of quite good chances. I thought he actually should have been awarded a penalty, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it just wasn't to be. I think the policy of rotation with the goalkeepers, I think, is a bit strange, even still. There's a clear winner in my mind, a clear number one in my mind between those two goalkeepers, and it's not Jason Steele.
Yeah, it's
personally.
Yeah, agreed.
I think at least one of those City goals was probably his fault. Now, the deflection you can't do anything about, right? Foden's second was the defense's issue. Way overthinking, way overplaying, and getting caught out, you know, what, 23 yards from goal?
Mm-hmm.
and he was able to just slot home with the easiest of finishes. Mm-hmm. It's just tough. They're just in a bad way. I don't think they're a bad team. I don't think they have bad tactics necessarily. I think it's just one of those situations where
they're
it's just
tired.
Not going well
they're
for
tired.
Them at the
it's that simple. Yeah. They're tired. They haven't
been able to rotate the way they've been rotating. Yeah.
They are flat out out of gas. Well, now the mission is very simple for a city. And we say it's simple because they do it every fucking year. 5 games left, win every fucking one of them. It doesn't matter what you do. They win another title.
Yep. They still have to go to Tottenham like we do, which is the biggest hope for us because they have yet to score a league goal at Tottenham. So we'll see. We'll see. I'm tentatively excited.
Well, we got rid of one of them for you, Graham. I can't do much else than that, okay?
Cheers.
Rounding out the rest of the league, and oh, so that happened. Manchester United 4, Sheffield 2, Crystal Palace 2, Newcastle 0, Bournemouth 1, Wolverhampton 0. Let's make this quick, because honestly, there's not a ton to really say about these matches. Blades go up twice, United finds a way, and frankly, Bruno Fernandes just had an incredible fucking match, is what it really came down to for United.
Wasn't it Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde? Weren't they, isn't that an English story?
Yes, it is.
You could basically just supplement that into the modern history of Manchester United, and it would read the exact fucking same, mm-hmm. right? They aren't together, they're disjointed, but the absolute quality of the individual at that club is a lot better than what we had discussed with Chelsea or whoever. They are actual proven talent. They just don't like each other, where Chelsea are talented individuals that are unproven with no real experience, if that makes sense. So a lot of Manchester United getting over the line is Bruno Fernandes acting like a petulant child for 90 minutes and then for 10 minutes going, okay, I'll be the adult in the room and actually doing something.
Right.
Which is exactly what he did in this game, really. There was a lot of complaining to the referee, a lot of surrounding the referee, a lot of the shit that we have become accustomed to when it comes to him. But ultimately, at the end of the day, he went, I fucking got this. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. I have to say, I feel for Fotheringham, the keeper for Sheffield.
Yeah.
He actually played his ass off way too well to give up 4 goals. And the way he's just been kind of done dirty by Sheffield, I hope the kid finds a move. I hope he's not there next year. I hope he finds a place where he can play and he could be their number one. He made mistakes while he was up, and you expect that from any young keeper. But he clearly knows what he's doing between the sticks, man. Yeah. He knows what he's doing. He made some fucking just worldly saves.
Now,
and his team just let him down
also,
over and over again.
I think you also look at Gustavo Hammer and Berenton Diaz.
Yep, absolutely.
I think those two players, in addition to Fotheringham, are going to be on the sales block this summer. And I think they're going to get moves to pretty decent clubs that you know, some people might be surprised that they actually end up at.
Yeah, don't disagree. And Palace are on a bit of a run, my friend.
Yeah, they are. The game was boring as fuck. Nothing really happened. Newcastle offered next to nothing in the way of chances.
It is amazing what happens when Eze and Elise are both fucking healthy.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. But, you know, the front line for Newcastle, you can argue, is close to a first choice.
Oh, absolutely. I'd agree with that.
Only 2 shots on target. Only 7 shots overall. Palace were 20 shots overall to 7 on target. They just had the impetus. They look like that whole front line is completely revitalized. And now that Elise's fit, Eze doesn't have to do it all on his own, doesn't get double teamed, doesn't get triple teamed. and you have this other outlet to move the defense around, and they're finding the spaces. And the one person that's you know, kind of succeeded beyond all else is Mateta. What is it, 4 games in a row or something he's scored now?
Exactly, and, what I was about to bring up was
Mateta.
Obviously
had the brace in this one, yeah.
Do we think we finally figured out who the front man's going to be? Because obviously IU is aging out. Eduardo, hit or miss. Do we think that Mateta's the guy? Do we think that that's their striker moving forward?
I think so. I think Alton Edward is going to be a good option off the bench.
Yeah, use him as the backup.
I don't think he'll be happy with it. I think he might try to move on. But I think Mateta is definitely the one to lead the line going forward for them, at least at this stage. The hope is for them is that they're able to keep hold of Eze and Elise. Arsenal are rumored to be in the market for Elise.
Mm-hmm.
And with as absolute dog shit as Antony has been, if Ten Hag ends up moving on this summer, that $100 million man may also be on the chopping block, and they're going to need somebody to fill one of those winger roles, and Eze could be that guy.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, Manchester United have spent worse money than $85 million on a player like Eberechi Eze.
Yeah.
So I think this summer is crucial for Palace if they're going to finally finish higher than 11th to keep hold of some of these guys. Because Mateta's not one that's going to be able to do it on his own. He needs that service. He needs that help.
Yeah, he needs help around him.
And it's no surprise, really. I mean, we've talked about it a lot. It happened with Wilf, right, over the last few seasons. Zaha was out. Palace were the worst team in the league.
Mm-hmm.
If Zaha played, they were fine and could probably get across the line. And that seems to be his role now, is the Wilf Zaha role. If you're fit and you're playing, we've got a shout. You know, Elise is that cream on the cake that takes them over the top, that actually Palace would probably win this game.
Newcastle now find themselves in 7th place, so still in Europe, but now 3 points behind United. So they're going to need to get a little help. The good news is United is so schizophrenic in front of them that they could go out and lose their next two. Well, at least they have that going for them. But this was one. Newcastle needed this one. Newcastle should have gotten this one.
Newcastle should have at least given a better account of themselves.
Yeah.
Which is what I would worry about, Newcastle supporter standpoint. They should have given a better account of themselves. They just didn't. They looked like they didn't have the confidence to go win the game.
Cherries finally get themselves another win and find themselves in the top 10. They're in the top half of the table now. Although, gotta say, shocker, would it really surprise you to hear, Sam, that Wolves got done dirty by VAR? Kind of is a normal routine.
Yeah, but if you're Gary O'Neill, they'd win the league if it was for VAR.
Yeah, I don't see where there was anything really harsh in that play that ultimately took away the goal. I would just, Cunha's arm was up, but did it really change? It was almost like they were like, okay, let's keep moving it back to see if we can find something to make this be a goal.
Yeah.
Oh, there it is. That's what we'll say. It's that, you know?
Right, exactly. I don't know, man. The good thing for Wolves, and this is what, you know, kind of lends credence to what I told you about the text message Paul sent me on Friday about the Arsenal-Wolves game, where I said it seems like everyone always gets fit and then everybody was out. A lot of those players that were quote-unquote injured featured in this game, albeit off the bench. So what he had told me was that he thinks it was a lot of the sports science guys going and pushing them too hard. They're going to get injured if you play them. And obviously Wolves are safe. Wolves are comfortable. And they decided to not play those players. And then even in this game, not start them, bring them on for cameos later on. So they really didn't have a player on the field to begin with to change the game. And it always looked like a Bournemouth win, obviously, because of that.
I would say what's interesting is that there's actually an there's a little battle going on between 9th and 13th. But the problem is that this time of the season, none of us really fucking care.
Sure money.
All righty, Mr. Graham.
I lost again.
Oh, no. Shocker.
Yeah, it's all due to the corners for the Arsenal because Chelsea are so bad at defending, which is
not good gambling.
Oh, that was, you know what? That was actually great sound work by me because you went, which is, boom, nailed it.
All right. Didn't realize everybody was going to be privy to a masturbation this episode, but that's fine.
Nine-way parlay.
Did not work out for you.
So here we go. I'm, like I said, down $2,047, which is just funny at this point. I have something that I think is pretty decent in the works here, but I'm going to save that and let you you have at it with your bet, sir.
We won our first Merseyside Derby game in Goodison Park since 2010. Everybody was privy to a masturbation session tonight, Mr. Graham. Come on. There's no fucking denying that. I lost with Newcastle, so I am down $378.
Big Sam's Lock of the Week.
25.714286% of the time. Works 100% of the time, big boy. I'm going to go ahead and do a three-leg parlay this time. I'm going to take Newcastle because I'm a glutton for punishment. Villa and City to beat Sheffield, Chelsea, and Forest at +231.
There you go. Nice. All right, cool. I have an email here.
Yes, Mr. Pat.
And now, it's time for our degenerate gambling friend, Pat's Pick of the Week.
Winning is loosing.
Mm-hmm.
Loosing?
L-O-O-S-I-N-G.
It happens sometimes. I loose all the time.
Well... We knew that, ho. sorry, guys, for my non-participation on Monday. No excuse, and I'll take a L after taking a win. I, too, bet on Villa and won $200. Hmm. And for a no-bet deduct, $100 from that. So I am now down $1,300. And this week, I'm feeling saucy.
Uh-oh.
I'm doing a four-game parlay, which always works out well. Liverpool over West Ham, Manchester United over Burnley, Everton over Brentford. To go back to back on Everton, that's wild. Mm-hmm. Villa over Chelsea. Saturday Obviously. Will be fun if I hit the first three and Chelsea fucks me. On a $100 bet, it pays off at $1,150.
Wow.
$1,150. You all have a good weekend, and I hope there's a good match Sunday morning to watch. I sure wouldn't mind seeing an upset Sunday morning, that's for sure.
Oh, I see what he's doing there.
Well, I got to call him and make sure that we get on record. We have our one ironed, super crisp American dollar up for grabs.
Heard. Very good.
With our two teams playing.
It's a sense of pride, so damn it.
That's it. That's Pat's bet for the week, and this is what I got for you here. So, like I said, I'm down $2,047. I'm currently losing this entire situation, but after this week, I think I will be back, not in the positive, other than being ahead of both of you guys.
Parlay.
Not quite, but close. Under 3.5 in West Ham, Liverpool. Liverpool obviously haven't been playing particularly well and can't score. West Ham traditionally don't score very many goals. So I feel good in the under 3.5 in that game. I'm parlaying that with United to beat Burnley because somehow they'll figure it out. Villa to beat Chelsea. Newcastle to right the wrongs against Sheffield. Also 2.5 goals, over 2.5 goals, excuse me, in that game. And then I'm putting my heart on the line with Arsenal to beat Tottenham and over 2.5 goals in that game on Sunday. So all of those things put together in $100 bet will pay me out at $1,880.
Not good gambling.
I think it's pretty decent, actually. But to be fair, your buttons and to your button pushing ability, I've been rolling a fair few times this year.
Grammy folding.
Not folding yet. I'm still confident. And I'm now arguing with I'm arguing with pre-recorded messages now, and I don't really like it.
Notice he never zesty. He never plays the "You guys should listen to Mel." So
you dick should listen more to Mel. So
dot dot dot.
Well, we know Gen Z hates when Gen X does dot dot dot.
The fact that we do it in talking. So you're going to have those reports to me by this afternoon, right?
Well, you know.
So.
You know what I'm excited about?
Huh?
The chicken can fuck off.
So, Kitty missed with Liverpool on the Merseyside Derby, and she
serves you right. Going to make you into cocoa bun.
At 18 and 15, and she was quite displeased that Everton won and just handed me a bet with City beating Forest and abruptly waddled away. Now, yeah.
Yeah, she was not happy.
That's
tough
all.
Shit. That's what you get for picking against Guy.
That's all she wrote.
That's it. That's all she wrote.
You know, but I'm sure if she could write more, she would like to remind us all to please gamble legally. And responsibly.
Very good. Trying to throw a little loopy one, huh? But I kept it in front of me. All right.
It's a looper.
That's gonna wrap it up, boys and girls. Mr. Graham, any parting words?
No, not really. I don't think I have much to say other than, Godspeed, thoughts and prayers, and massive condolences to all of our Liverpool brethren for their title challenge dying out on Tuesday.
Fuck R. off, Copites or Gobshites. You lost the league at Goodison Park again. You know, Sammy, I've never felt more like singing the blues when Everton win and Liverpool lose.
I mean, it's better than losing the title in your own stadium.
Alrighty. So next up, thank you for joining us, boys and girls. Next up is going to be injury time. We're going to go ahead and preview the weekend's action. And for all your Patreon people, since we aren't doing a EFL show for the midweek, we're going to catch you up on what happened there as well, since Ibs don't play till the weekend. Mr. Graham, should somebody want to find injury time, how they go about doing it?
Very easy, actually. It's patreon.com/dufootballshow. You sign up to that one beautiful $5 tier. Very easy, very simple. Just one payment a month of $5, and you get all of our extra content. Even if sometimes we're a bit late with it.
Or the sound gets fucked up and we don't put out a sound check like today.
Or you can't actually hear us. Mm. You'll still get an empty audio file.
I just... No. And Brody, I just... for the Brody that might be listening, I put the kibosh on soundtrack this week because sometimes there just isn't any sound to sound.
Yeah, precisely. Till next week, everybody.
You know what, Mel? Here's the sound check since they paid for it. Brody's a cunt. Just isolate that. It's easy.
Born in the land of Bowie, Maryland. Bred to be a fan of fucking Everton. Punch you in the eye and drink your rye. Sam Houston. Arsenal fans have another Sam. Right, AA, the fucking Gooner Graham. Stuff of a lord. Look straight in shorts. Sam Graham.
Sam Graham.
Drunkard United! Get the fucking new button!